From newsounds.org, it's time for another live in-studio performance in the series we call the Soundcheck Podcast, streaming live on YouTube and Facebook. I'm John Schaefer. Adia Victoria's new record called Silences is full of the sounds of the blues. Sounds plural, because of course there are many different types of blues. Even the songs that sound recognizably like indie rock or orchestral pop have a blues heart beating beneath them. But Adia has more on her mind than just reclaiming the blues. We'll find out what went into the making of the album Silences in just a few minutes, but first, here's Adia Victoria and her band to play a song called Different Kind of Love. Called Different Kind of Love. That's Adia Victoria and her band live here in our studio. The song is on her brand new album, which is called Silences. Adia, it's great to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Let me introduce the members of the band. On guitar is Mason Hickman. On bass is Jason Harris. Pete Edens is playing our piano and his keyboards. Behind the drum kit is Naps and the saxophones played by Chazen Singleton and Austin Willey.
A.K.A.
what?
Willey.
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 The mononymic Willey.
That's right.
Got it.
That's right.
So, Adia, if you had called this record Silence, that would have suggested something, but as soon as you add an S to the end of Silence and it becomes Silences, that's a much more kind of suggestive or evocative title.
Right.
What did you mean by that?
Well, I think it's a little bit more aggressive. It's a little bit more tangible. Silences, I think it's more active than just silence. I named it Silences. It's after the book by Tilly Olson of the same name, which was a feminist masterpiece in the 70s, which examined the ways that women who have the seed of creativity in them, it's often, it goes unwatered due to the obligations that society puts on women, namely of domestic work and then work outside the home. And we socialize women to take care of everyone else before themselves. And, you know, Tilly was wondering how much of a creative output have we lost because of that from women, because they never had the ability to invest that much needed time to bring their ideas to bloom.
Right. Well, you know, March is Women's History Month, and when you look at the history of classical music, it's dotted, just dotted, right, with occasional women whose talent was so great that it kind of popped through this complete patriarchy.
I can relate.
Right. And so you think, God, that was like 300-400 years of music that we lost.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, how much art have we lost because of patriarchy, because of things like racism and oppressive systems that are meant to keep people not only in their place, but stifled from expressing themselves? And when they do you even include them in history?
Right. Now, the blues is an interesting kind of genre for you to be working in, because it too, until pretty recent history, was a kind of a male. I mean, you think of someone like Geechee Wiley, mm-hmm, you know, whose record, Singular, was uncovered and, you know, just within like our lifetime, you know. Aside from that, you think of the great bluesmen and they are all men, you know, Robert Johnson and Skip James and Blind Willie Johnson and all the rest. Mm-hmm. So is it your suspicion that a similar thing happened in the blues, that in the 1920s and 30s there were these great blues women that we didn't get to hear?
I mean, it's not my suspicion. It's what I know is concrete fact. Black women invented the blues. And we have been, as the blues has become more appropriated by white audiences, the black women are the ones that have been mostly erased from the page. We've suffered the greatest erasure, and I believe that's because our voices are the most radical. Our stories are the ones that expose the truth about the way that our society is run in this country. And at the same time, that we are the most American voices. So yeah, I have no doubt that I think there's been a deliberate effort to keep women of the blues in their place and shine a disproportionate light on the men, yeah, which isn't to say that the men don't deserve it. That's never,
sure,
how this works. That's why it's so unfortunate, because they make it seem like only one can succeed, or, and that's just not.
That's not a zero-sum game, is what you're saying.
Exactly right.
So you talk about your voices are the provocative ones, the important ones. Certainly, on this album, Silences, you come right out of the gate with God is dead, I killed him, you know, I did it clean so it didn't hurt, mm-hmm, but that sets a tone for the rest of the record, which in the classic blues tradition, you know, going back to Robert Johnson with Hellhounds and Judgment Day and all, is full of religious imagery.
Right.
Was that something that kind of just grew as you were writing the songs, or did you set out down that road?
I think that these were just, you know, religion was my initial oppressor growing up in the church. It was my original silencer. It was the original finger on my lips. So that was something that I felt in the record that the character would need to do first, would be to kill the idea of God. And the song Queen, I actually wrote dedicated to my ancestor, Marjorie Bell, who had been a slave in South Carolina and given birth to 13 children. And only one of her children survived. The children died very young under dubious circumstances, and she prayed that her children would never live to be slaves. So the family lore is perhaps she mercy killed, you know, all of her children. So I wrote this queen as kind of a her revenge on killing this idea of God, this male God, this white, you know, patriarchal system that has walked into her garden and disturbed her peace. And so she kills him, and then she subsumes herself underwater, under the waves, to find peace. That was probably the most, I'd say, not challenging, but therapeutic songs for me to write. I felt a release after I wrote that. Of just like, I'm going to get my peace.
So we have this character, and she does the deed and tells us about it. And then are we following her story through the arc of the rest of the record?
Yes. So the first two songs, she's most preoccupied with shedding herself of God, of religion, of morality, of right and wrong. You know, bring her back. She's basically laying bare the hypocrisies of the Christian religion, the Christian faith, of be good or else you'll burn forever. Right. And once she's gotten rid of her religion, she goes out into the world and has her ass handed to her repeatedly over the course of that album.
And she does meet the devil at one point.
She meets the devil many times.
And, you know, after you've killed God, who's you're left pretty much to your own devices, right?
Then, yeah, then it's just you and the devil. As Robert Johnson said, it's me and the devil.
Yep, yep. Now, towards the end of the record, the song you're going to do next, called Dope Queen Blues, appears.
Yes.
And when this song came out, this was one of the singles, and it struck me that, you know, here was the voice of someone both kind of reveling in the freedom of being young and footloose, maybe in Atlanta, but also kind of casting a gimlet eye at that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's when you're having so much like hedonistic fun and you realize your life is going nowhere and you're just like, I've just lost myself for no reason, but I'm having fun, so I'm just going to keep doing it. I'm not going to respond to any responsibilities right now.
And here you are in the studios that spawned the two Dope Queens.
That's right. What's up, girl?
Ready to play the Dope Queen Blues. Adia Victoria and her band are with us here in the studio. Let's hear this version of the Dope Queen Blues. Dope Queen Blues from Adia Victoria and her band. Sounds a little different from the version that's on the record.
A little bit.
A little bit. Silences is the name of the album, just out from Adia Victoria and the band. Adia, as you were talking about before, there were some big ideas at play in the songs on this record. Did that lead you to the bigger kind of sonic palette that you're using on this record? You got the horns, there are strings on many songs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew that working with Aaron Dessner meant that I would have pretty much any instrument, any tool that I wanted to use at my disposal. So I went into the studio to do pre-production work to meet him for the first time with my creative partner, Mason Hickman, my lead guitarist.
Mm-hmm. Also playing keyboard in that last song.
Also playing keyboard, and he played the keys on Dope Queen Blues, and yeah, he's all over the place in the record. And Aaron asked me, you know, like, what are your influences? What are you thinking? And I was like, I want it to sound like Billie Holiday got lost in a Radiohead song. And I just remember looking at his face, like, And he just starts walking around his studio, like, looking at his stuff, you know? But I wanted to subvert genre and the idea of boundaries between, like, different, you know, types of music. I think that you can walk a blues structure with classical strings. I don't think that the two should run, you know, parallel. I think that you should meet, like, see what happens. And that was definitely the creative spirit up at Long Pond of let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So Aaron Dessner, one of the twin guitarists of the National, producer of many records, including Silences, although clearly you had a big hand in sort of shaping and directing the ultimate sound of this record as well.
Right. Well, we covered a lot of ground, Mason and I, in Nashville, producing a lot of the demo work still was used in the record. So we went up with a pretty fleshed out idea of where we wanted to go. And that just made it all the more easier when the whole band got there to really experiment and play, because we did have this framework that Mason and I had brought up from Nashville.
Now, you mentioned growing up in South Carolina, you know, in a religious family.
Yes.
Did you grow up with the blues at all?
Well, I had the blues, but I didn't listen to him.
That wasn't what I asked you.
Could have been, depends on how you interpret it.
When did you discover, like, you know, when did you go back to, like, the Delta blues and the country blues and the gospel blues?
I got into the blues proper when I was 21, living in Atlanta, when I started playing guitar, and I just fell in love. I started researching on YouTube different singers and their contemporaries and their contemporaries and their influences, and I just fell in love. And I felt, for the first time as a black woman from the South, I felt connected to a larger culture that I could be proud of, that was proud of me.
Hmm. And so you were able to kind of finger your way into the, you know, figure out the fingering
fumbling.
And the...
Well, yeah, and I'm still stumbling and bumbling, you know. But I think that's... The blues allowed me to make mistakes. I didn't feel like I had to be, like, perfect. You know, I could try and figure things out in a way that worked for me. And it helped my self-esteem. It allowed me to create goals for myself and enact a plan and put it in action and work toward it. So it definitely, it pulled me up.
Well, and it also, I mean, it sounds like it might be a constricting thing, but in fact, the blues is the opposite, because you scratch any form of American popular music, you know, jazz, rock, hip hop, whatever, and the blues are underneath
it. It's almost like black people have created everything cool in this country.
But you've also done an EP of French songs.
True.
Now, what did you hear in those that made you think that this would be something you could find an entry point to?
I mean, I love classic French pop, you know, 1960s stuff. I love the songwriting. I love the simplicity, the beauty of Françoise Hardy, her voice, her words. I love Serge Gainsbourg. I love Jacques Brel, Edith Piaf.
Right.
And I love the French language. So I was just like, let me just show on up and let's lay down.
And, I mean, Jacques Brel especially, although I think he was Belgian, not French. But anyway, you certainly hear the blues, some sort of blues in his music, for sure.
That man was yearning.
Yeah.
Same with Edith. Like, you know, her...
Absolutely.
The poetry, it's just straight up blues. Like, these people were feeling some kind of way.
So as I alluded to in introducing you today, you know, this album, Silences, does have a wide kind of swath of music that it covers.
But, yes.
But for you, there's always that kind of core of the blues.
Right. So I'm a student of the blues. I don't think that it's necessarily just a 12-bar phrase. I think that the blues is a frame of mind. It's a way of viewing the world. It's a state that your heart sits in and rests in. And that's what I wanted to bring to this record, the sensibility. I think that the blues is a way to look at the world, remark upon it, but do it with a wink and thumbing your nose, you know, to your audience. Like, isn't this some crazy-ish?
Yeah. All right. The song you're going to do next is called Heathen.
Yes.
Sort of a piece with the religious theme, or the imagery that runs through a lot of these songs.
Yeah.
Is it as simple as that, or is there anything else that we need?
I mean, this is a song just about the policing of women's appetites, sexuality, their bodies, the double standard of, you know, men can enjoy us and not suffer socially, but the woman is the one that's demonized and cast aside. So the character in this song is just like, you know what, you think I'm a heathen? I don't care. Don't care.
Adia Victoria is with us, along with her band, here in the New Sound Studio on this edition of the Soundcheck podcast. Here's a live performance of Heathens.
I never bothered to ask. I never bother with please. I never bother with excuse me, miss begging pardon, darling, that ain't for me. I like to do things my way, or I don't do them at all. Cause first they ask me to compromise, the next breath the mending crawl. I guess that makes me a covered in shame, shares some covered in sin. But in my ways last night, and it sure ain't not my skin. But darling, I never talk.
Oh, oh, no.
You know that I never tell.
Oh, no.
I'll be a toilet pond, the dark, the silent jail, so bad. Oh,
Heathen is the song. What a skanky little bluesy number that is.
Woo, she got a hot tail on her.
That is, well, Adia, I think you said it right before the song that, you know, sometimes if you're talking about these things, you need to be able to do it with a wink and a nod, and a little thumb of the nose to have some fun with it.
I'm not here to proselytize. I'm just, we're all humans.
All right, but let me give you a chance to proselytize. Favorite amendment to the Constitution?
Oh, man, I don't read that stuff.
Come on.
That's just a bunch of dude in wigs just sitting around writing stories, back in Philly. That stuff don't mean nothing to me.
But you wrote a song about the Seventh Amendment.
I did.
For Radiolab, for their series of songs about the amendments.
I did. Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I was just refreshing. I was like, yeah, I did. I didn't write it for that project. It was a song that I'd written years ago. It was actually the first song I ever wrote.
Are you kidding?
No.
Wow.
That's how I learned the E chord and the A minor chord was that song.
Oh. Yeah. And you just kind of stumbled onto the subject matter of the Bill of Rights.
Well, no. I suggested this song because they assigned me the amendment about a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
And so Caravan is a song about an extrajudicial lynching. And a man that didn't have the right to a fair trial and jury by his peers. He was just hunted down by a lynch mob. And the story follows this girl that finds this man that the lynch mob's after. So they're running through the South trying to get away. And everywhere they go in the South, the lynch mob shows up. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, that was my first song.
Wow.
Yeah. I wrote that when I was 20.
Now suddenly a lot of silences makes more sense. It's like that opening track, Clean, seems to be cut from the similar cloth.
I'm a very heavy girl.
Adia Victoria's album is called Silences. It is brand new. She's been here with the band here in our studio for this edition of the Soundcheck Podcast. And Adia, this has been great fun. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck Podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. Our video producer is Justin Sergi. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us. Yeah.